Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with SJ and Eva B. We are a three-way Zoom podcast from London, Dublin and Madrid. And thanks for listening. I watched you the other night.
I watched the
Delinquent season, was it?
Yeah.
Very good, Eva. I thought you were fabulous. Absolutely flawless.
I'd love to see it.
Amazing actors. Just brilliant.
Incredible.
Really superb.
That's really nice.
Just superb. Yeah.
Thanks, love.
How did it do at the was a cinema release, right?
I think it got a short run in the cinemas because it didn't do as well, I guess, as everybody had hoped it would do. The reviews were kind of mixed. It is a shame because it was a good bunch, but
we don't all relate to every stories are so niche.
Yeah,
there is not one audience for every script, for every story.
No.
You know what I love, you might hate.
Exactly. Yeah, and then that's why I find the whole role of critics really interesting because we read reviews, and reviews to a large extent are really important and really, you know, you put your work out there because you want people to look at it, to read it, to whatever art form it is. And I think a good critic will help your work be understood. It's how they help explain it. They'll dissect it in an interesting way. And if you read a good review, it's a lovely way to, when I watch a film that I've loved, sometimes I'll read the review afterwards. I won't want to read it beforehand because it'll give too much away or it'll put me off. But reading good review after something that I love can be a really enjoyable process because you go, I missed that. Or that's how they got, and you understand the work on an even greater level. And I think that's when a really good critic is worth their weight in gold because they really appreciate and understand art, and it's their job to, you know, interpret it and help the viewer interpret it. But then there's also, because of the world we live in where with social media, everybody's a fucking reviewer.
Everyone's a critic now. Yeah, everybody.
Everyone's a critic now. And that's when it can be really damaging. That's when it's, you know, put you off seeing something altogether, which I think.
Oh, well, if you see a film that has one or two stars attached to it, there ain't no way you're going to give it your time.
That's
useful because, I mean, I don't think something garners one or two stars without being very bad.
The starring rating can absolutely have a place. The thumbs up, thumbs down rating is new because I think the rating thing has gone out of control because on Netflix now you can just rate this title where you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Yeah.
But who's your source then? Just a lot of people out there, everybody's opinion is valid, but it doesn't mean they should be reviewing films.
Well, and Rotten Tomatoes is, you know, that's so many people want to get a good rating on that.
Yeah, what's your percentage in Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, but Rotten Tomatoes is considered a fairly fair gauge. So I have a bit of respect for that, right? Because at least we're talking numbers and there's a bit of power in numbers. Where I have a problem is the individual reviewer, the one man's opinion that can close a play overnight, that can shut something down. That's different. So at least the Rotten Tomatoes is a bit more democratic.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should say that because Ellie was on the receiving end of such a review. He was 29 at the time. His first play had sold out in a theatre in New Haven, and it had been workshopped in a small off-Broadway theatre in New York, and it had done really, really well and, you know, great reviews in New Haven, and there was great buzz about it. And then people wanted to transfer to Broadway, and he had his first play premiere on Broadway at the Walter Kerr Theatre. It was, you know, such an event in his life, and he was terrified and petrified and excited. So in New York on Broadway, you have up to 40 previews until the opening night.
And oh, my word.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of previews.
Yeah, a lot of changes were happening because some stars were now cast and they had their voice. And so he was kind of watching it change before his eyes. But he, as a young writer, had not found his voice to defend his play. And the night of the opening, he and the director did not watch the play. They went out for drinks and went out for dinner, which is her tradition. And all his friends and family have traveled from New Mexico. And they knew that the New York Times review was going to be out, I think around 12:30. And if the New York Times review loved it, they were safe. If they hated it, and it's this one man's opinion.
Yeah. Was this man, I famously remember Frank Rich being
No, it's, it wasn't famous. Frank. It's not okay. The Butcher of Broadway. It was his the next one. And the review came out and they were all in the bar afterwards. And slowly but surely, everyone started to leave the bar. He fucking slated it. And he was particularly mean to Ellie, this, you know, young writer who had watched his play disintegrate before him and didn't have the confidence to stand up for himself and to stand up for his writing. And the play closed the next day.
SJ, can I just ask you something? When you say he didn't have the confidence to stand up for his writing, do you mean in the rehearsal room to say, actually, I don't like the way this is going?
Yeah.
Can we go back? Okay.
But when he did, he was basically, you know, there was a lot of tension between the actors that had been selected to perform in the play on Broadway. And it was a really, really powerful event in his life. In that,
listen, it's Broadway. There are very few people in the world. Every writer aspires to that if they're a playwright. Very few make it that far.
Exactly, and then
it's huge.
But then to have it all be taken away in one night because of
one person.
There's so many good sides to this story. And the best side, we always look at it, is if the play had gone on to be fabulously successful, we would never have met, right? Because our but my point is that this one man's opinion on this play, but his particular, you know, the way he went for Ellie and Ellie's writing, it is very difficult for a young artist to crawl back out and to be able to get back on the saddle and to be able to write again.
But how does one person get to wield so much power? You know, if there was, like, you know, six reviews and it just tanked across the board and was like, that's the general consensus out of, you know, all those reviewers, then you kind of go, okay, there's something wrong with the play. There's something wrong with the actors or whatever it is. But for one person to wield that much power.
Because is long before social media. The New York Times wielded power. That's what everybody...
They did. And who's reading the New York Times? People who can afford to go to the theater.
Yeah.
That simple.
So yeah, they had that power to open or to close you overnight. Yeah. Terrifying. And I guess in a way there was the drama of that sort of added to the theater world in New York. There was always this fear of what's going to happen. Are we going to survive opening night? You know, is it going to go on? So it created a kind of tension, I guess, you know. Sure. But underneath all of that, a writer can be destroyed. A writer's confidence, like on a much smaller scale. I presume we've all been on the receiving end of
bad reviews. Yeah. Yeah,
The first one that I remember, and I kind of think I more or less stopped reading or tried to stop reading reviews after this, was, again, very young, you know, very young. Like, one of my first jobs was in the Gate Theatre doing Present Laughter. And the opening, I had the opening of the play, which was a phone call, and it was very, very funny. Every review, I brought the heads down. But I had a word in it where I used to say, again, she was very posh English and it rhymed, the sentence rhymed. And I said, again, And I remember it sitting uneasily with me. So I was checking with the director, checked with the producer. I asked everybody, is this correct? She's upper class aristocratic. Is again, is that correct? And they all said, absolutely. What you're saying is totally fine because it rhymed with some other word in the next sentence. But I was uneasy about it. But anyway, what could I do? I asked for all of the opinions of the people who were above me, more experienced than me. I went ahead. Off I went and the review came out. And what did it say? This young absolutely slated me in particular for using the word no. I can even remember it. And we're going back now 30 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. No self-respecting debutante would use the word again, spelled A-G-A-Y-N-E, and other such solipsisms. I'd never heard the word before. So it really launched in my mind. Do you know what I took away from it ultimately was, first of all, I was really upset because this was something I had given thought to be sure that I couldn't be picked up on this. And I'd been assured I was doing it correctly. Anyway, that was one thing. What really bothered me was that she never said she brought the house down, the room, however, the room loved it, or the reviewer gave her reaction. She did not give the reaction of the theatre, of the audience. She didn't at any point say the audience loved this show. And I just have an objection to that. I feel like if you want to say, I bloody hated this, but you know what? The audience loved it.
Yeah, they're either laughing or they're not. So to not mention it is kind of cruel.
But you're also, aren't you misleading the reader? If you were a person who's going to go, I'm going to go straight to the Indo to read this review and see if I'm going to go to that play or not. And they don't see that the room was falling around with laughter all night long because she hasn't bothered to put it in a review. And the reviewer will remain Emer O'Kelly, by the way.
I was going to say to you, was it Emer O'Kelly? Because when I was starting out as an actor, every single person would say, oh, well, you know, she's not going to like you because she's not kind to young and pretty actresses. But I have never been on the wrong side of her reviews. So that made me feel, am I not pretty?
Am I not young?
Am I not young?
Had a reputation for that.
But we only remember, I only remember the bad reviews, right? Like you remember that line from your bad reviews.
I was devastated.
30 years ago. They lodge in your brain. Like the good reviews, they don't lodge in your brain. The bad ones just stay with you for the rest of your life. One of my worst reviews, there's two that have stuck in my mind. And one of them is from, I think it was my first proper play in the Peacock Theatre. And the line went something like this, was Eva Berthasil looked like she walked off the stage of another theatre and accidentally found herself upon the Peacock. I'm in the wrong fucking play. That line I'll have with me to the grave.
Who was the reviewer? Can you remember?
It was a woman. Maybe it was Emer O'Kelly. I don't know. I can't remember.
To research. We're having a little moment of revenge now, anyway.
Sorry, Emer.
Over herself.
It might not have been her, I have to add. Yeah, yeah. And the other line, which just like is again lodged forever, is a truly terrible performance by Eva Berthasil.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. It really can't get any worse than that.
Who's having the last laugh now? You're having a glorious career, Eva. About to star in a massive TV show, which we can't announce, I know, but let's just say it for the moment. Yeah, we've survived.
Yeah, and Ellie has crawled his way back. And look at him now, releasing his book. I mean, incredible. We do. And I think, you know, as artists, you learn the hard way, I suppose, don't you? You get battered and beaten and spat out and you pick yourself up and you do it again. And it'll happen again. It'll happen all of us again, probably, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, on that note, this podcast will be reviewed. So people who are listening, you know, by all means, give it a 5-star and a lovely comment. If you don't like it, just listen to something else. You don't need to post a comment. A friend of mine asked me, did I want to go to see a fortune teller, a reader, like a person who reads tarot cards. But she desperately wanted me to join her. So I said yes. And I was thinking, I'm at a certain place in my life now where I don't need, I think I have a bit of fear that she might say to me, yeah, that relationship's going nowhere, isn't it? or that child is going down the wrong road. Something that I just don't want to hear. So I thought, oh, these readings are going to see people like this. They're for times when your life is uncertain, right? When you don't know whether you should be in a particular job or relationship or whatever. They're not for when you're actually content. So I'm like, man, I don't really want to hear from you now, to be quite honest with you. I'm fine. So I was dubious about going to see this healer, spiritual card reading person, but I went anyway. And wow, like I was impressed, very impressed, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But you know, the thing that amazed me was, because I think there are kind of all kinds of different levels of these people, you know, from charlatan to master. And I suspect this guy was a bit of a master. But you know what? He hooked me within 20 seconds. He had me, and my skepticism was on high alert, right? But at the same time, I'm open to things, and I was easy about it. I was prepared to be entertained, let's say, if nothing else. And so he laid out the tarot cards, and he just looked up at me. I wasn't across from him 30 seconds, and he said to me, "You're very worried about memory loss and that you might get Alzheimer's someday," he said. "You're not going to get that." Wow. My heart actually nearly stopped, because I have been worried about this. I have decided it's actually menopause brain, which is very similar to baby brain fog. You know, where I can't find words. I just cannot find words anymore. And it has at times really freaked me out. And I've genuinely, you know, thought, you know, I don't want to go and do the test. There's a test that you can do to find out if you might be susceptible to Alzheimer's, but what are you going to do with that information?
I know, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
That's a terrifying thought, right?
Yeah.
So I've had this anxiety about it, and I've worked at letting it go and going, you can't give that energy, D. You've got to let that go. But don't you think it's interesting that this was the first sentence out of this man's mouth? I actually thought, if you say nothing else to me, I will pay you right now. Because I felt a weight come off me. And I said to him, I can't believe you've said that. And he said, have you got reason to worry? Is there a lot in your family? I said, not directly. My mother doesn't have it, but two of her siblings and her mother. So it's there.
Yeah.
And he just looked at the cards again. And he said, yeah, well, it's not for you. He said, you're not going to get that. Wasn't that good?
Yeah. Well, peace of mind.
Yeah.
But he had me in the palm of his hand.
Yeah, he's got
me. After that, I was like,
tell me more.
Lapdog, tell me more about me. Let's talk about me. It's amazing how much we want to talk about ourselves. Tell me more. I didn't get any sense of the charlatan. I liked the man. He said a lovely thing about my dad. You know, he said to me, your father's death, he said, was a good death. He said he died, suited him, how he went. He said he wasn't afraid. He wasn't fearful. It was fast and it was good. He's in a good place. And those things are kind of, they're nice to hear.
They're nice.
I mean, any randomer could say it, I suppose. But I suppose the point is he's plucking it out of the air. And, you know, maybe my father, he didn't know. Maybe my father could have had a horrible death from cancer. I've heard people have had traumatic experiences with their parents dying and it not going well. So he wasn't to know, you know, that actually my father actually died quite very quickly. We think probably a heart attack, but he wouldn't have known that. So it was just lovely. He said, no, it was good for him. It was how he needed to go, which is what I would have felt myself anyway. So little things like that. And my mother, he said, oh, your mother's unkillable. Oh, Jesus, she's unkillable. And he said, she's very sharp. She's very sharp.
Got on there.
Which I took to be a compliment to her. And then at the end, he has a bed. So he does a kind of little bit of healing. So he did a not much hands-on, very little, but just like placing a hand in specific points. And around the legs, this will give you a laugh, because I wondered, is it because of the veins? You know, what had the veins removed. He said to me at the end, God, there was a terrible weight around your legs there at the bottom. I never mentioned the veins before, I was too vain. And he said, just something holding your back, he said, yeah. And I've taken that away. Isn't that lovely? You see, I just love the kind of folklore of it. I love the theatre. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And we should get booking.
Definitely we do a little day trip. That'd be great.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. So we're off. We're off now. Liz, I'll go again. You'll have nothing to say to me this time. I'll have a load of questions. You again. I asked him about this. I asked him about the podcast. And do you know what he said? The first thing he said, oh God, he said, three very strong personalities here. He put out the cards and he said, three very strong personalities. Work. He said, yeah, that's going to work. And then he said, I think you might change how you're running it. He said, you might change the order things and just you might change how you're managing it. But yeah. All good. Three very strong personalities. No, there's no weakness there. But did you ever go and hear anything that was good, constructive?
No, but I think I don't have that much experience with it. I remember like at a hen party years ago, they had a tarot card reader and it was all quite vague stuff. You know, it was all...
I think vague is...
Yeah, you could apply to anybody's life, yeah. Really. I hilariously, actually, once the last time I went, it was very spontaneous. I hadn't planned on it. I didn't. It's not something I'm particularly interested in. But in saying that, if anybody said, fancy come along with me, I would probably always say yes, because I find it intriguing enough. But I always expect the person to be a charlatan. And I went to I was out with pals. This is a good few years back now, having a drink on Portobello Road, and there's an event upstairs, and the person who worked at the bar club said, look, they're doing readings upstairs. If anybody wants to go, you know, there's somebody that's free at the moment. There's a few tarot card readers and sort of dotted around the room. You can just, if there's a space free, just go and join and get your reading done. And I was like, ah, feck it, yeah, go on. So she kind of twisted my arm. So I went up and went over to the table, smiles, hi, how are you? She's like, great, sit down there, I'll do a reading for you. And I was very, you know, nice and friendly and stuff. And she started doing the reading. She went, well, you're obviously in a very happy stage of your life. Things are going very well for you. You seem very relaxed in your life. So I get the sense that you're very content with where you are in your life. Little did she know, because she got it so wrong, I had literally just separated from my then husband and I was going through possibly the worst stage of my life. I was fucking rock bottom. Like, I was so low.
She really got that wrong.
Yeah.
She really got it wrong.
I just gave her a smile because I hadn't met the woman before. She decided I was just the happiest thing around. And
oh,
I
went, you put on a great show.
Very good.
You've got it wrong. I had to put her straight. I went, you've got it so wrong.
Did you say, well, here's your money back? What?
No, she tried. that I would have respected. She tried to talk her way out of it and just got, it was even more nonsense. So But I think, so that's my only experience with that kind of a reading. And Ross does know a lady who has an amazing reputation. I think what she does is she has a lot of spiritual healing and makes certain decisions in your life and get you back on the path. And I haven't met her yet, but I have to say Ross met her, not he didn't go to her for those purposes. He met her through work. And within the first few minutes, she brought up something that me and him had only spoken about the night before that nobody else knew about. It was quite a big life thing, but we hadn't told anybody else.
You see, that's fascinating.
In the first 5 minutes, she said, are you? And she mentioned it. And he was like, nearly fell over. She's like, how did you, what? And she picked up on this very, you know, big thing that we had just discussed, you know, but just between the two of us. So I never rule any of that stuff out, because that I can't explain.
I think there are people in the world who definitely have whatever you want to call it, a sixth sense, you know, they definitely have an ability to see and read things. I think I don't think there are many of them now. I don't think they're at the hen parties.
No. They're not. That's the difference, isn't it? They don't need to go around to hen parties and get the,
SJ, did you ever have?
I'm too much of a skeptic.
I know. I love that about you.
No.
Have you ever been? Did you ever actually have your cards read or anything?
Actually, there was one fun moment when we were in New York. Two very good friends of mine came to visit while I was doing a play there. And one of my friends is very much into all of that, into astrology and healing. And And it was the first time she met Ellie, and Ellie would be even more of a skeptic than I am. But the two of them really hit it off, you know. And so he would put his hand up to her forehead and say, you know what, my higher self is talking to your higher self right now. And they're getting on really well. And, you know, she would laugh. And anyway, we were at this hotel, and Ellie said, he's like, okay, I've arranged something for the three of you. And we went in, and there was this fabulously flamboyant Puerto Rican man, and he was enormous, like in his personality, in his physique, everything about him was just larger than life. And he was hilarious. He said, there is a man in your life and he has blonde hair. And she went, and he went, no, it's brown. And I watched the whole thing. I watched him do it, but I also watched her going, like, she was giving him the information he needed to do his thing.
I think that's the skill of a lot of them. I'm going to get you to tell me stuff, and I'm going to reiterate it to you.
And I loved watching it being done, and I loved watching him do it and her receiving it. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with hope, is there? Like, but
we all know that actually the answers are within, and you have to go within and search within yourself to find the big answers to the big questions, right? That's pretty straightforward, I think. But I think if it's entertaining, then good. You know, if it's a bit of crack, then fine. I went to one once. Wait to hear this. She said to me, oh, she put out the cards and said, oh, I see two houses here. One is abroad, overseas, two houses. You know, and one is here, definitely involves a foreign country, and it's happening very soon, very soon. And she was adamant. And not only was she adamant, she said to me, I really want you to let me know, because this is imminent. Now, I interpreted this as, finally, my home in LA is going to happen. I'm going to have a home in LA, and I'll have a home in Ireland so that I can ground my children in the summertime. And this will be my Hollywood career. Of course, it makes sense. This is what I wanted. So I was delighted about myself. But I didn't think it was going to happen within the next few weeks, as she kept thinking, I thought, oh, this, I think that's a 5-year plan. But anyway, sure enough, she gave me her number and said, let me know, because it's so imminent. So to talk about selling it, lads, the very funny thing was, within a couple of weeks, I had auditioned for a play with Team. Do you remember Team? Theatre and Education Company.
Yeah.
And I was cast in this play, and the play was called Two Houses, and we toured to France.
But she wasn't wrong then. Sure, she wasn't wrong.
But I was gutted that this was the reality. Name, I'm filled with the job and all, but it certainly wasn't LA. Very funny. The tour to France was something else as well. Jesus, the days. These were the days. Theatre and education shows. You were paid a pittance, do you remember? But the hilarious thing was, we were farmed out to families when we got to France. So we didn't stay in hotels or B&Bs together. We arrived in a bus and into various different towns across France. And we'd get out and there'd be a team of families waiting to greet us, like literally exchange students who went off to learn a language. And off we'd go to our various different respective families who'd be waiting for us.
What age were you?
Probably about 19, 20.
Okay, right.
Some of the others were 25. Like, it wasn't, you know, it was a paid, it was a legitimate job. Like, but there was just shoestring budgets. So, you know, I suppose families were asked, are you willing to take a poor actor from Ireland into your house for a night or two? My strongest memory of one family was that there were three sons. The family were there and off we went. I got into the car. The car was a very manky, quite smelly car. And I thought, oh, this isn't a good sign. And we got to the house, and the house was full of stuffed animals. Everywhere you looked, there was stuffed animals on every wall and every surface. I thought, oh, sweet Jesus. And into the bedroom, and there were stuffed animals on the walls. And the three sons were looking at me, and they were all ginger. And I thought, this was unusual for the French. But anyway, they were all kind of looking at me like they'd never seen a woman before. Do you know this kind of... And the next thing, dinner was served, and I sat down at a plate that had a raw steak on it. It was a red steak with blood, blue, as they call it, blue, but ironically, it's red.
Yeah.
All over a plate full of blood. Now, my French, lads, my French was non-existent. So I was trying to explain, oh, I can't eat it. I couldn't even cut into it. I couldn't even attempt to eat this meat. I don't do rare. I do medium well now that I'm older. But at that time in my life, I would have done, well done, please. Well done. So I was trying to go, I can't eat it. No, sorry. Too red. Rouge. Very rouge. Very rouge. And they were like,
very rouge.
They had no English. I mean, not a word. This was in the middle of the wilds of nowhere. And eventually I remember miming, cutting my wrists to try. I was trying to find the word for blood. For blood. And they were looking at me doing this mime of me slashing my wrists. Probably thinking, oh, Jesus, she wants to do some damage to herself. God. And in the end, the dictionary came out, and I will never forget the words for well cooked as long as I live. It's bien cuit. Bien cuit, well cooked. And they fell around laughing. Oh, the whole French family, they fell off their chairs with the laughter. And I took the steak away, and it came back like, you know, a kind of a medium.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Esther had a job yesterday and signed an NDA, non-disclosure. We can say that, right? We can say that you signed an NDA. Even that in itself is quite exotic.
Yeah. It was just one of those really random jobs that just come into your life because of what we do. We don't...
Yeah.
The best money I got on a random job, like, you know, random actor's job, was being Santa's helper in Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. Up at the top, they had built a kind of a, like an airplane, like a spaceship that would take the kids to outer space to see Santa. And Julian Erskine ran it. Did you remember lovely Julian Erskine? Yeah. And Julian ran it, and he paid us all extremely well. Yeah. I think he just had worked with actors for so long that it was like, listen, if you're prepared to humiliate yourself and put that spaceship, that space outfit on you and get a load of children onto that flight. And I remember like we were paid like 500 quid or something massive for the week. I was rich for 3 weeks' work. It was one of the good jobs. Yeah. It's funny, back then, like, we really were penniless. Like, we're not just saying it. Penniless. I mean, there was nothing. Sure. I remember that house in Hanbury Lane and the Liberties that I lived in, and going, Jesus, I haven't a penny. Yeah. And there's no money coming in until Friday. Yeah. And I remember gathering up a lot of bits in from the house, random ornaments, and putting them into a box and going in to, like, it wasn't a pawn shop, but it was like a charity shop that would give you a few quid for stuff. And I took in a box of stuff, little presents that I had. Ainsley, do you remember Ainsley?
Yes.
A couple of them and a couple of other random bits, and I thought, don't want these. And I took in a basket full of stuff, and I remember her giving me 10 euro. Or it wasn't euro,
10 pounds, probably. £3
10 then. Quid for the stuff. It was probably worth 50 or 60, but I was thrilled. It was like, that tenner is going to get me to Friday. And I remember thinking, and I've got no more shit left, so this can't happen again.
Yeah.
I had no more, and nothing else I could sell. What about the jobs that are not lovely that we've all had to do to fill in as poor actors over the years? The waitressing jobs, I was a shock.
Oh, there's been so many. I was a shock. Well, I became a good waitress because I just did it for so long. That was my longest standing other job. I waitressed just for years.
I don't think there's an actress in the world who hasn't waitressed for a while. Yeah. I didn't waitress for long. I was so shockingly bad. Nobody wanted me. I mean, I couldn't even learn to be good. Yeah. I couldn't even learn to be That's good. Funny. I was just dreadful. Yeah. I don't do subservience well.
Oh, yeah.
And there's an arrogance in me. I don't know how I survived those. Do you know those few years? I remember. Do you remember the time I stayed with you? I remember you had a waitressing job. The time I stayed with you and Andrew in that house.
Where was it? Stapleton Hall Road. That was in Finsbury Park.
Finsbury Park. Yeah. I stayed with you for a couple of nights.
Yeah. Yeah. We had that
big old
flat.
I was over for.
You were probably over doing a gig or something, no?
I'd say I was probably, I bet you I was over to audition. They were the days when you used to pay 200 full pounds to fly over for an audition.
I know.
That I never got.
I know. The wasted money, the wasted trips.
Not sure, listen.
All that cash and jobs you never got.
All our hopes and dreams and, you know. I just remember, Eva, I remember you going to a job, to a restaurant.
That's my waitressing job, yeah. That's because when I moved over in 2006, I think it was, I had no money. Like I remember I had £300 in my bank account and that was all I had. There was no savings. There was nothing. Sure. Why would I? I was only 26 or whatever. And I had to get a job straight away. And there was a restaurant at the end of the road. And that was it. I went in and said, are you looking, do you need any staff? And they said, yes. And I started working the next day. I mean, I'd already waitressed a lot in Dublin before that, but I waitressed a lot in London. Yeah.
Like you, Eva, I waited tables for the best part of a decade. I stopped doing it for a while because I needed to take a break. And so I was doing all these other random jobs. I was personal assisting and I was doing these event jobs for a company that do clinical trials, but we needed more money. We were broke. And then we had these two friends who ran a catering company in LA and they were incredible at what they did. And they overpaid their staff because they really respected, you know, their servers and they treated them accordingly. So it was always a nice way to dip your foot back in. If you go, you know what, I need a little bit of extra money. I'll work for the Schaefers. And they asked me to do this event. It was a wedding. I thought, you know what, I'll do it. And it would have been, you know, a 12-hour event. That's what usually these big weddings are. 300 guests. And it was in a ranch in Simi Valley, which is...
I could actually feel my blood pressure almost go through the roof on just 300 guests, a 12-hour event. That's enough for me to go... Aah!
Yeah.
Go on, eh?
So this ranch, there are mountains everywhere, and there was a Grand Prix course, there was an equestrian center, there were 10 guest houses that had three rooms each, and there was the big Spanish villa. And as soon as we got up to the villa, I heard screaming from somewhere. And what I heard was, "You cannot do this! You are ruining my day! This is my day!"
Oh my God, it's Veruca Salt.
And I turned.
She's getting married.
And I turned to my lovely owner of the catering company and I said, "Is that the bride?" And he said, "Yeah, she's been yelling all day." Okay, good to know. So the ceremony was about to start and we were kind of putting the finishing touches on the tables. One of the groomsmen walks up to the bar and said, "Can I get a drink, please, for the groom?" And the guy said, "Yeah, sure. What would he like? Can I get a bottle? Can I get a bottle of vodka?" I looked at the groomsman. I kind of gave him a nod because I thought, if I was the groom, and I knew I was going to be marrying into this family.
Raise up those mountains.
Any minute now, I would need a bottle of vodka as well, right? And then we kind of gave a knowing like, yeah, I get it. And so after the ceremony, which went on a bit longer, and all the guests came onto the dining area, they were angry, like demanding.
Angry service. And hungry.
Angry and hangry. Every single one of them believed that they were the most important person in that room. And they were taking each other's chairs. They were moving tables. Nobody gave a shit. I want to sit here. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to move this. And everyone, already like the tension. The mother of the bride was already storming up and down the lawn. Her shoes were off. She was yelling, going, "Get the salads out! Get the salads out!" I was like, "Oh my God, we haven't even started yet." Then the sides come out and the bride comes up to me and grabs me by the arm. And she's like, "What are these? What are these? These are the salads. Everyone's expecting more food. Where's the meat?" "The meat is coming. The meat is coming. Everybody just thinks they're just getting this. Where's the meat?" "It's coming. These are the sides for the meat. We'll get it out." And so like I went into the
hope that's not what she was screaming at her husband later on that night. <Get it. laughs> "Where's the meat?
Where's the meat?"
And so the meat comes out and I lay it down on the top table. And I know it's supposed to be family style. What does that mean? People serve themselves. The mother of the bride comes up to me. She grabs me by the other arm and she's like, "Serve, you need to serve the food." I said, "But it's family style. I need you to serve the food. Put the food on the plates. Put the food on the plates." "You mean serve them? Serve them." And so like, I thought, okay, this is not what I was asked to do. And it's not in line with, okay, well, if you're telling to do it, I did. So I start putting the food on the plates. The bride comes up to me, grabs me by the arm. What are you doing? You're serving. It's supposed to be family style. Your mother told me to serve. You're ruining my wedding. You're ruining my day. This is my day and you are ruining my wedding.
Wow.
And I put the food down and I went, okay, you know what? I'm just going to get your mother and you guys can talk about this yourselves, okay? And brought the mother over and kind of put them, and they just started yelling at each other.
Was it all just because the service had overrun and they'd all gotten very hungry? Like, was that
no,
what was that?
It was
the
all because they were just horrible people, right? Exactly. It didn't matter. You could have everything was exceptional and pristine and brilliantly doled out, I'm sure. But these people just sounded like the kind of people that they would find problems with anything. Right?
Exactly. And it started as soon as I arrived, she was yelling. You know, like this is who these people were. And I sat in the car and it was midnight at that stage. And I sat there and I just welled up and went, I am never doing this job again. I have to figure out another way because I will not be spoken to like that again.
Well, they do say if you want to get to know a person, take them for dinner and see how they treat the staff.
And I have some friends who are not nice to serving staff.
I do too. And good friends, people that I love that are good friends, and you see them in a restaurant and it's either if they're not being outright rude to them, they're completely ignoring them. They're not their dinner will be put in front of them and there'll be no thank you. The last of something, there'll be no please. Their plate will be taken away and be no thank you very much. That was just the basic courtesy of saying thank you and please. They don't do. And I find that shocking and upsetting.
Yeah, they don't see
it. Makes me embarrassed. Yeah. It's so rude. They don't see them.
It's very telling, but it's also very surprising as well. And you think, oh, but then you think, you know, have they done it before? I often feel like if I ran a country, I would make everybody wait tables for 3 months. Just 3 months. That's all you have to do. Just do
it. I told you you could rule the world, and this is how you start. I did a job once where I was promoting a promotion person in supermarkets. Do you know those testers come and have a little test of this in the supermarket? And the product was called Pocari, right? Did you ever hear of it? So the drink, it was a drink. And the tagline was Pocari, bigger than milk in Japan. It was rotten. It was. We were poor as church mice, three actors living in the house up with the Liberties, and my fridge was full of Pocari. It was all we had.
It's like, what would you like? I'll have a vodka and Pocari, please.
We never had, like back then, probiotics. It was like full of electrolytes and probiotics, things we didn't understand. I'm talking about 25 years. Pocari, bigger than milk in Japan. And I had a white tracksuit and it had Pocari written down the leg. thing on the arm. I had a baseball cap and everything. And I remember being in the supermarket in Stephen's Green. Going, Bacari, bigger than Milk in Japan. I had an audition at lunchtime and I didn't have the wit to get out of the tracksuit. And I remember not having the wit of a change of clothes and running up to the gate to do an audition at lunchtime for a job and going in the fucking tracksuit that said Bacari all over it. And I don't even think I took the baseball cap off, and I couldn't understand why I didn't get the job.
I had a job when I was living in Derry, I was probably around 16, in the body shop, and it was my Christmas job. So I worked there, you know, I'd go after school and at weekends. And at the end of a shift, right, I think back at the time I didn't question this and I wasn't particularly shocked, but looking back, it's just like, that's outrageous. At the end of the shift, you'd have to, you know, make sure all the bottles are, you know, straight on the shelves, you know, tidy up the place, and then check the baskets at the front of the shop, which had, like, you know, the random bottles of bubble bath and soap.
Well, that's
and
true.
Stuff.
Don't you remember the baskets?
But then one of the jobs to do was to check for incendiary devices. And I was told this on my first shift. So Jen just checked the baskets for incendiary devices. I was like, what do you mean? She went, just go through the baskets and make sure there's no incendiary devices. I was like, bombs in the baskets. And she went, you'd be surprised.
Not bath bombs.
Bomb bombs. And you'd have to get your hands and rummage through the products in the baskets to check for incendiary devices.
Not so much as a helmet or a suit or a
gas mask.
The song Last Christmas took on a whole new meaning. Okay, lads, it's my turn to check the baskets. This could be it. See ya. No, okay, we're clear. We're okay. I mean, how outrageous is that?
My first job was I worked in the chemist in Tralee, and I was working with this girl, and she was so, like, I was only 16 and she was the same. She was just so lovely and was very naive, very wide eyed. And this big farmer came in one day and he said, Durex, please, a packet of Durex. And she turned around and she got a 4-pack of Duracell batteries. She was like, do you want the AA? Oh, Jesus Christ, girl, it doesn't need batteries at all.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the podcast, which was called Bigger Than Milk in Japan. If you like this podcast, and we know you do, it would be just lovely if you would subscribe or like or give us a 5-star rating on Apple. All of these things help us enormously. And we love you. You know we do. Gracias.
This podcast is powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.